Hello, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Hope for Healthcare with Dr. Katie Cole. Dr. Katie Cole is a holistic physician, organizational well-being consultant, and change agent, working with industry leaders in proven strategies to heal our national healthcare system and our culture of medicine. Stay tuned to hear today's speaker.
Well, welcome everyone to Hope for Healthcare. This is a podcast in which we interview expert leaders around the country on best practices for healing our national healthcare system and culture of medicine. Today, I want to extend a very warm welcome to my great friend and colleague, Dr. Sue Patternacht. And I've had the pleasure of knowing her for, I think, over 2 years now. We've met through the burnout symposiums and the well-being community. So I'm grateful that I finally got Dr. Patternacht to be on the podcast today. Dr. Patternacht is the CEO of Incline Leadership Strategies. She brings over 35 years of experience and expertise in organizational leadership, team and negotiations coaching, training, consulting, public speaking, and facilitation to her practice. Her healthcare provider and supplier clients have ranged from multinational public corporations to small privately held companies, working with multiple levels of healthcare providers in various medical specialties. Dr. Patternacht has also been an Excellence in Teaching Award winning professor in organization and management at UC Irvine Mirage Business School since 2005 and has joined the UC San Diego Business School in 2024. She teaches leadership negotiations and talent strategy courses to MD, DO, MBAs, and to physicians and other healthcare providers going to business school to earn an executive MBA. She earned her Doctor of Education from the University of Southern California in organizational change and leadership in 2022. Her research actually focused on physician burnout in the COVID-19 pandemic, healthcare organization and leadership implications for patient care, and clinical team leadership with nurses. Well, welcome, Sue. I am so grateful to have you here today on the podcast.
Thank you, Katie. I so appreciate that.
And, you know, Sue, I always like to ask a question a little bit more about your own journey with healthcare burnout. And I really would like to know how you initially developed your passion in coaching executive healthcare leaders.
Sure. So my passion for the healthcare industry and working with healthcare providers actually started now almost 30 years ago when my mother died from breast cancer. She died before her time, as we say. And I did a lot of extensive work with the physicians, trying to get them to tell us what was going on. And to make a long story short, that it took a lot of navigating, you know, different physicians at different times to be able to find out what was really going on. So I was already starting to think about, communication with patients is a bit of a challenge. And after my mom passed, I joined the American Cancer Society as a volunteer, and I was a volunteer in various aspects. For 17 years. And I actually did a lot of leadership development and coaching with the staff, as well as with the physicians there too. I then, as you noted, started teaching healthcare executive MBAs at UC Irvine. And with my new consulting practice, also started getting more and more clients. I also joined the American Lung Association, which I've been, I'm now on the national board. I've been involved since 2014 and have also kind of gotten a different take on what their context of burnout is. What further triggered this though, Katie, was shortly before the COVID pandemic, I decided to go back to school for my doctorate. And I was going to study physician leadership. And when the news came out about Dr. Lorna Breen and her death by suicide came out, I started looking pretty deeply into the notion of physician burnout. I certainly knew about the issues of medical errors with my father's experience with the medical industry and medical care. But I wasn't really seeing it through the eyes of the physician. I was really looking at it from the position, sorry, of a patient and a patient's family member. So even though I was working with physicians ahead of time, once I started teaching, and once I started getting more and more clients, I started seeing things from the physician perspective. But it really amplified when the pandemic hit and the news of her death by suicide came out. So I shifted my dissertation focus to being not just about physicians who are in leadership roles, but physicians who are viewed by the community, by patients, et cetera, as being at least informal leaders, even if they don't hold a formal position of leadership. And so that's kind of where I took my deep dive into my study and converted an interest into a passion.
I love that you did that, Sue. And if you hadn't done that, we wouldn't have met. We wouldn't be here today. So I'm grateful for
That's true.
the research. I'm grateful for the research that you have done on burnout and how it impacts, leadership qualities and changes in leaders over time. We've had several conversations leading up to today over the past couple of years, and one of the things we discussed was talking about some of the ways in which physicians and executive healthcare leaders get derailed in terms of their leadership qualities. Do you want to maybe start by overviewing some of the top ones you've seen in your practice?
Yes, I would love to. So the where this comes from, Katie, is an assessment tool called the Hogan Assessments. And a Hogan Assessment looks at personality measures for the purpose of predicting occupational success. And it's grounded in very strong theoretical foundation of Jungian psychology and the five-factor personality theory. It's about 95% reliability in terms of taking a look at these things. So while I didn't, I want to just preface this, while I did not use the Hogan as part of my study, kind of in retrospect, with all of the physicians and physician leaders and other healthcare providers, such as nurses and nurse practitioners that I've coached or I've trained or I've taught, there are some derailers that the Hogan identifies that really correlate well with the Christina Maslach and World Health Organization definitions of burnout. So let me kind of take a step back. So the Hogan takes a look at kind of three factors of personality. One they call the bright side, which is our strengths and our competencies. The second is what Carl Jung would call the shadow side, but Hogan calls it the dark side. So those are the derailers that adversely affect our performance as well as our reputation that we actually developed and honed as children that are no longer serving us. So there, think of them as a psychiatrist, you would think of them as cognitive distortions, right? So, right. Yeah,
Absolutely.
cognitive distortions that kind of impact our behavior, right? And create that bad behavior. So everyone has these, right? So even though we're talking about physicians and two physicians, everyone has a risk factors of these from no risk at all, low, medium, and high. And so at the low, medium level, they tend to be triggered by exception, but at high levels, they tend to kind of come out more easily. So the dark side or the shadow side is really only when we're under stressful situations, right? So I want to just be mindful as we're talking about this. These are not general descriptions of physicians throughout the day, throughout the weeks and months. This is in stress. What behaviors get triggered and why? So there are three categories of derailers, and one of them is kind of this moving away behaviors. And in moving away behaviors, we manage, and I'm going to continue to say we because we all have these. So we manage our feelings of inadequacy by avoiding true connections with people, right? So one of those behaviors is called being reserved. So it can be associated with low sociability and interpersonal sensitivity. But what happens is when our reserved derailer kicks in, we start to keep to ourselves and become conflict avoidant and just avoiding people and situations, and we become indifferent to other people's moods and their feelings, and we can become aloof and argumentative and tough and remote and cold and distracted, right? And unsympathetic, right? And detached. We can make decisions independently without seeking the input of others, because we just don't want to deal with having a difficult conversation. We can appear to be lacking passion and being stoic, being unsupportive of other people. And we can kind of misread social cues and maybe stand up to criticism, you know, when and that's perceived, but maybe not real. So that's reserved, right? So I would actually turn that over to you. You know, so does that sound about right? You know, so in your practice as a psychiatrist and in your work with physicians, do you see reserved behaviors when people are, when physicians and other healthcare providers are in stressful situations?
Absolutely. And I think it's one of the things that I work on with my physicians. I have in the past as well with our my coaching work, is that, you know, we don't have that training in crucial conversations and having conversations that would where we are in a position to advocate for ourselves in a way that's professional. We don't have education in how to language things to hospital and healthcare leadership. And, you know, there's always that underlying conflict of interest because hospital leadership is for the hospital and making money. And as physicians, we're here to take care of our patients. And so sometimes with that underlying layer of moral injury and conflict, you know, it sets up for miscommunication. And so a lot of times I find that physicians get either they get very passionate and outspoken, and you know, they might get very angry and frustrated at a meeting, and they have a great point and they have data to support it, but it's not coming across that way in their delivery. And then the other flip side is that physicians a lot of times tend to get just very quiet, and they don't want to say anything. They don't want to ruffle the feathers. Maybe they're in shock about what's happening at a meeting. They can't believe it's happening. They need to process it. You know, if they're like me, more introverted, we have to go internally process things for a while and make sure we know where we stand on something. So there's a lot that goes into that. I find that it's really important to know what kind of conversational style that you do have and to be able to moderate that and be somewhere in the middle. So, and that's where you come in, Sue. So.
Yes, absolutely. And so this makes me think of a couple of circumstances, right? One of which is, you know, not speaking up and avoiding conflict can be highly correlated with medical errors, right? Like, yeah, I'm out, right? I tried, I just don't want to deal with it, right? And the second is, and you know that I have a keen interest in this, is in dealing with medical mis and disinformation, you know, in the public health sphere that patients bring with them, you know, to clinic, you know, and their families as well. And so, you know, kind of, I saw the progression of behavior from physicians throughout COVID, which was starting out trying to reason with people and being factual, proceeding to being argumentative, right? And then getting to that burnout stage of, you know, I'm done. I'm out. I'm going to try once. And if they're going to come at me with their Dr. Google against my MD, then, you know, it's on them, right? So, which translates into patient outcomes, right? Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, and also, I mean, I'm wondering too, from a data standpoint, if having that communication style sets you up for burnout, because one of the definitions of burnout, that one aspect of the triad of symptoms is feeling detached and numb. And so I wonder if you already have that kind of reserved confrontational style, if that sets you up for burnout because you're not able to process with people, you're not able to voice your opinion about what's happening at times. So.
Correct. Yeah. And so on the big factor personality scale, that would be associated with introversion, right? So people who, again, so I'm going to speak in terms of probabilities, not certainties, right? So people who tend to be introverted will tend to, you know, go to be reserved, but it's not always the case that way. And certainly extroverts can become reserved too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So another one that I wanted to bring up, Katie, that is also that moving away and dealing with feelings of inadequacy by disengaging from true connection is the derailer called skeptical. Okay. And so in skepticism, it's not so much like avoidance, which is what reserved is. This is being cynical and mistrustful and doubting others, right? And being alert for signs of deception, right? And all of this is kind of grounded in feelings of perceived mistreatment, right? So it assumes ulterior motives and hidden agendas. And it's not only mistrust of people, but it's also of institutions. Right. So it can be associated with holding grudges and not letting go and being unwilling to forgive those perceived wrongdoings. Lots of fault finding, right? And difficulty navigating politics because of that. So think of like they don't forgive and forget, right? And they'll push back hard when they're triggered. So again, also, if they're good at reading social cues in the normal day to day, though, this kind of takes a hit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if we think about the burnout factor, the second burnout factor of dissociation and cynicism, you know, this almost reads word for that, as far as I could see. So again, let me turn that over to you. How does this resonate for you in terms of what you've seen in your practice with physicians?
Oh, gosh. I mean, so when we have like the different drivers of burnout, you know, there are multiple that actually overlap with that. I think one is, you know, if you're skeptical and cynical and, you know, doubting your leadership, or if you're an executive physician leader, you're doubting the team that you are working with or the capability to make changes in policy, it's definitely going to lead to, I think, a breakdown of community. And that's one of the main drivers of burnout. And so when we have a breakdown in a community, we have a breakdown of trust. And so when that starts to happen, that even feeds even more paranoia and skepticism. And it's like a vicious cycle. And it just deteriorates very quickly unless something happens that's an intervention to change that. I think another driver of burnout that addresses that too is, you know, an absence of fairness. And so sometimes I think if you're skeptical, you're not going to trust that everyone is being treated the same way. And, you know, you feel like maybe your other work colleague that's in an executive position is getting maybe more leeway to make decisions or more autonomy and control over, you know, their department versus what you're getting to do. And then that further is exacerbates those drivers. And then, you know, it comes down to lack of control and autonomy. So, you know, as a physician, I've had my own experience actually with every single one of the things we're talking about in physician leadership, where, you know, I am really not a cynical person. You know, I am an optimist. I really am. I'm a cautious optimistic, but I am an optimist at the end of the day. And I always laugh, you know, I used to be just an optimist and it's cautious now, but, you know, there are times in my career over the past 20 years that I've become very skeptical and paranoid, and I don't like that feeling because that's not me, but it's the circumstances and the environment creating that. And it just leads to a toxic work environment, you know, and value conflicts and all that. So yeah. I think there is so much overlap between what you're discussing and, you know, the drivers of burnout. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And you made me recall the incredible quote from Vice Admiral Dr. Vivek Murthy, our Attorney General, who said that burnout, originates in systems but manifests in people.
Yes.
So, so we are focusing on people, we're focusing on individuals, but again, the intent here is not to blame the victim. You
Correct.
know, we all have these behaviors, and the system, as we know, is broken. So you can have outstanding people on a broken process and in a broken system, and it's their performance is going to be compromised, right? And their derailers are going to be triggered. So I just wanted to kind of preface that's the context in which we're talking about is when we're in stressful situations.
Absolutely.
And the final one that I wanted to talk about actually is not in the moving away category of derailers that Hogan talks about, but it's in the next category, which is moving against. Right. So this is managing our self-doubts, those feelings of self-doubts, by actually being external, by dominating and manipulating others. So one of those behaviors that I pulled out is called mischievous. And when we're mischievous, we can come across as either, charming, kind of charm to disarm, or as impressive. Trying to use our competence, our expertise, our experience to kind of disarm other people when mistakes have been made or when rules have been broken. So people who are mischievous are kind of to your point, Katie, about having autonomy and the issues of control and fairness. So people who engage in mischievous behavior, derailers, will deliberately bend inconvenient rules. I can't tell you how many times I heard that in my study. Rules that were made by people who are not medical people, or rules that apply to me but not others, as you said, from a fairness standpoint, et cetera. So it's bending those rules and without concern or on the impact on the system, on the rule makers, on the rule implementers, the impact on interpersonal relations. So when we're being mischievous, we can come across as being insincere and deceptive. But here's here are two mottos that I'll close with. One is that people who engage in mischievous derailer behavior are outcome engineers. The ends justifies the means. And it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. I can't imagine how many of us have engaged in mischievous behavior once we kind of hear those mottos, right? So very, very human, very understandable. And yet, when that's done with rules that really have good intent, it's not just about cost, it's also about safety, security, consistency, et cetera. Sometimes, the wrong rules are broken. Sometimes the right rules are broken, but sometimes the wrong rules are broken. So that's when, physicians are taking things upon themselves, and being their own judge and jury in that case. So what do you think? Does that ring true for you in either your practice working with physicians or as a chief medical officer yourself? Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was kind of giggling because I'm like, ooh, I think I'm a bit mischievous. I mean, I've just been in some crazy situations, especially during the pandemic. I mean, I have to say that in my clinic, being on the front line, I mean, the rules were changing every day with our government in terms of regulations, what we were doing, and in our own infectious disease department was changing their mind weekly on testing and all this stuff. So, we had to use common sense and just step in and sometimes like make a quick decision for safety for our patients and our staff and ask for forgiveness later if it was against, because they might have just changed the rule that Monday and we didn't know about it yet because they hadn't had a meeting. So, there are circumstances I think when it's appropriate to do that. there are also toxic work environments that I've been in where I was sort of set up to be mischievous a bit for patient safety, and I didn't like it. But I had to make a snap decision, and you know, I chose patient safety and quality of care over anything else. And that we take an oath as a physician. So that definitely speaks to me, you know. And I know as a leader, when I found myself in that situation where I'm getting derailed, right? So I'm either becoming exuberantly passionate about something or very reserved and feeling detached, like I can't make a difference. And then, you know, exhibiting these behaviors, I know that it's the environment. So it's a work mismatch. As Christina Maslach says, you know, it's a job person mismatch. And I think as executive leaders, it's really important to understand your communication style and your leadership style. And that way you pick an environment that is going to nurture that and reflect that instead of you feeling like you're a fish out of water with your skills. So.
And the, you know, and the trick is sometimes the environment changes.
And you know, we know.
Diet changes or circumstances because of new leadership. And, you know, what's also underneath some of this too is our own values. And actually the Hogan calls that the inside. So we have the bright side, the dark side, and now we have the inside, which is our drivers and motives and belief systems and biases, unconscious biases. So yeah, on the one hand, you have healthcare organizations increasing, you know, values for security and stability, right? Operational excellence and consistency and commerce, right? Profitability, cost containment, etc. So it's all about kind of operational and financial excellence, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, they're being measured on the STAR model with patients, quality outcomes, et cetera, et cetera. You know, as physicians are feeling more and more commoditized and less, more and more voice suppression and less voice expression, you know, in terms of how things are run, you're starting to see the physicians' values for altruism, right? Which is a Hogan value for, wanting to be helpful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, every physician, every nurse, every PA, every person in healthcare goes into the profession, you know, to help people. You know, it's all about health promotion, disease prevention, and treatment. So this is a helping profession. And so just as you said yourself, right, you made some decisions being mischievous because you chose patient safety and their health outcomes, right, over, you know, some rules and regulations, you know, that's where you were coming from. You know, in addition, you know, most physicians that I know are highly ambitious and highly power motivated in that. And when I say power, that's not a bad thing, right? Because when we're ambitious and power motivated, we're results oriented, you know, we're achievement oriented, we have high standards of excellence. And we want to kind of control that with the expertise, with all of the years of education and experience, you know, that we've had to make the world a better place, you know, in terms of healthcare, right? So that can make physicians competitive with the system itself, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, you know, it's us. It can become tribal, and it can create that us versus them. You know, which is so, like you said, it's toxic. It's so the opposite of how healthcare is supposed to operate, right? It's supposed to, you know, be one big team. And kind of the, you know, so the values disconnect. I think you also talked about, Christina Maslach talked about that too. You know, the way physicians are being treated, right? The how in such a short period of time being kind of revered at the top of stature and status to being questioned and being disrespected and being treated with sometimes with hostility with people who are patients or patients' families who are, you know, counting more on their, you know, WhatsApp chats and their Google searches than what their physician has to say. And look, getting a second opinion from another physician has been around, for many decades. Right? So that's nothing new, but that's getting another physician physician's advice as opposed to non-professional's advice. So there's a profound amount of pain, right? That at the values and beliefs level that's underlying, these derailers, right? It's not just people behaving badly. Right? It's coming from a good place, right? It's the difference between intent versus impact, right? Just wanting to help people out, and the system is keeping me from doing that. And so whatever, derailing kind of dark side behaviors we developed, sometimes it's moving away, sometimes it's moving, against, and there's others which is moving towards, which is kind of being a people pleaser, which is a whole nother category of behaviors.
And that would be another podcast too, because
It would. Yeah,
I am definitely
not
a
even gonna
people
go
pleaser.
there. But that's another category. Some people just go completely to people pleasing, just be like being yes people. So if you're in a leadership role and you're seeing this in yourself and you're seeing this in your team, kind of buyer beware, right? That's an indicator, another indicator of stressful circumstances and what can be done at the individual level, which is always about self-awareness and self-reflection and taking a beat, and trying to, take sufficient amount of emotional awareness, so emotional self-awareness to get out of our amygdala override of our executive function, because there's a lot of emotion associated with this. And get back to our kind of brighter side, our strengths and competencies, and lead from our better selves. So we all have all of these, right? So being self-aware and being as a physician leader, being aware, seeing this in our team, checking in with our team, and knowing that that people can be their better selves. There's something triggering this, and what can we do to support and help them? And for physician leaders themselves, when you're seeing that in yourself, how can you yourself get some help, either from your own system or from outside?
Exactly. I mean, Sue, I love that you're really you're contexting everything around it being a systemic trigger, and it's not an individual leader's fault. Like it's not my fault that I tend to get non-confrontational or passive, or I tend to get aggressive under stressful circumstances. It's maybe just an unconscious pattern I developed in childhood, and I've taken it with me into adulthood. I may not even be aware that I'm doing it. And if there, you talk about that self-awareness. And so I think it's really important as a leader too to do the 360 evaluations and check in with your team on how you're doing with your leadership. And if you're aware that you have a tendency to do something, then you know what to do about it. You have to name it first before you can find a solution or get some coaching around how to improve that leadership behavior.
Yes, absolutely. And again, as a physician leader, these are when you start to see derailers in your team and even coming out of yourself, know that these are symptoms, right? We all have them. All human beings have them. And so when they're being triggered, it's not we're seeing the real person. Oh, now the real person comes out. It's just another part of who we are. It's a part of who we are under stress. It doesn't define us. Right. But it is a part of who we are and how and what's going on in the system. Or perhaps, by the way, for me as a leader, what am I doing? How are my derailers triggering other people's derailers?
So,
So
Sue,
those would be important things to consider.
I'm going to ask you a question. I want to role play for a second. So, let's say, and I've already identified
Oh.
that most of these are my derailing behaviors at various times in my career. I'm going to be honest and claim that. But let's look at the reserved one. So, let's say, as a medical director, I'm in a situation with my work environment where, there are a lot of policy changes. We've had leadership change. They're going in a different direction with the hospital. I have some concerns about safety in my own department, and I come to you for advice. And, the last several meetings, I've gotten really quiet. I'm more reserved. I don't even know what to say. I'm not sure how to talk to this new leadership team because I don't really feel like they have empathy or, and it's just my perception, right? But for whatever reason, there's a big communication gap. And so I've decided to get quiet and reserved, and I know something is wrong. And I come to you, like, what are some of the top what's one strategy you would tell me to work on, or how could I help turn that around before it escalates?
Okay. So that tends to be fear-based behavior, right? So I would start to ask some questions about what are you afraid of by expressing your voice, you know, and getting your, like, what are, you know, and so I would kind of workshop that with you, you know, what has happened in the past when that's happened. So some of it's going to be real and some of it's going to be perceived, right? And some of it's going to be assumed, right? So then I would say, so that fear also comes from, you know, not feeling safe. So when we're not feeling safe, we can't trust people. So, but I would have you do an analysis, and I love this analysis, of who are the people that you can trust that you can start to talk with one-on-one, mm-hmm. right? So this isn't going to be, this is a marathon, not a sprint, right? To change this behavior. So how can, you know, Gallup talks about in one of their Gallup 12 surveys, do you have a best friend at work? And some people think it's a silly question, but really what it means is, do you have somebody that you can trust, that you can be real with, that you can be transparent with no consequences, right? Psychological safety. So who will be not necessarily positive with you, but somebody who will be constructive with you, and who will see you, right? And acknowledge you. And, you know, and help you bring it along. If that person also is either at the same level or at a higher position of power, that's even better, because then they may have some sort of influence or access that maybe you don't have, that could actually convert that understanding and empathy into some action regarding some of the core issues. But even if that's not the case, you know, even if you're both in the same boat, maybe the other person, you've noticed the other person who has never been reserved before is now reserved, you know, maybe you can mutually support each other, have each other's back, right? In some way, right? So I would talk with a trusted other who is present and sees what you see, and kind of strategize how you can mutually support each other or get their support, so that, you know, you're not all of a sudden blurting things out, but incrementally, you know, you're starting to, you know, like the turtle is peeking back out of its shell slowly but surely, until you're getting to the point where you're fully present again, not mentally, but in the group. How does that sound to you?
I mean, to me, that seems like a practical first step to take. And a lot of us don't even think about, gosh, do we even have a best friend at work? Like, who is a confidant that we have? And if we think we have someone, maybe we're even work on nurturing and developing that, because that goes to community, right? So it's important for us to all have some type of community at work every day that we have psychological safety with. So I think that's a great first approach to trying to pivot a derailing behavior.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that, so that's, again, at the individual level, from a systems standpoint, you know, might there be people who are in positions of authority or in pivotal positions in the organization that we can start to build a relationship with and start to influence?
Yes. Yeah, just, you know, to reiterate, I think it's really important that we have those first steps. We can go to it an individual and a system level. I think having a mentor identified, you know, either at your organization or outside your organization can be helpful as well. I think having someone inside the organization can be extra beneficial, because I've found for me, you know, I have always had my coaches and mentors outside. So, you know, even though I've had coaches and mentors on the outside of whatever health system I'm part of, you know, I found that it's very key for me to have someone inside the healthcare system that I can go to that has the help, that particular health system perspective, and that can kind of coach me around the best strategy to use or communication style to approach the certain leader if I'm trying to collaborate on a project. I think it's important to have both, actually.
Absolutely. And even
Even.
if it doesn't fall into the category of best friend, at least initially, it might be somebody who you still trust, right? And whose work you admire. Right? Like, hey, if I had an issue, I would call on that doctor to be my physician or my family's physician, kind of thing. So you can always start small. And
Yes.
start early, and build, even if you've been pretty isolated, kind of coming in and out, you just never know. Grab a coffee, 10 minutes, catch a moment, right? Talk in the parking lot. I know that time is precious. Grab dinner after work if there's a possibility of doing that. So see if you can cultivate that, right? Even in the early stages of relationships. And certainly if you're new to a medical system, that's the easiest time to start that, right? But even if you've been with the system a long time, you go, hey, I've been wanting to speak to you for a while, wondering if you want to go, just grab a quick 10, between here and there, or right after the shift or something like that.
Well, Sue, I know we've covered quite a bit today, and this is very good information. It's great education for me. It's a good review, and it's making me even think about, my own communication style today, what I need to be aware of. So I really appreciate this. Are there any last words of wisdom that you would like to leave our audience today?
I think it's important to end these kinds of discussions with "Don't suffer alone." Right? Don't tough it out. You are tough. You are resilient, and don't suffer alone. Talk to a friend. Talk to a family member. Get a coach. Et cetera. Right? Just we're neurologically wired to be social and to be in community and to help each other. And you're people who are already in a helping profession, so it's okay to ask for help and get help every once in a while, because you're giving that gift to everyone for a lifetime.
Absolutely. And just remember too that not there's a lot of stigma around mental health, and when you start to feel burned out or detached or your communication style is changing, it's not because you're necessarily because you have depression or anxiety. It could be related to burnout, and it's important to understand the difference between that. And we're not going to change the stigma around getting coaching and having, solid mental health unless we come together and start saying, hey, this is necessary for me as a physician executive or a physician leader. I really need a coach. I need to work on my coping skills for managing this. I need more strategies to communicate with leadership. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, everyone has a coach. Sports players have a coach. I even had a retired CEO from a healthcare system tell me that, they all have coaches, and they're encouraged to have coaching, and they're given money for coaching. However, when it comes to physicians needing coaches, there's still that stigma that it's a mental health situation. And I think what we're talking about today is really being more proactive and preventive, where we're having self-awareness and we're identifying some possible derailers in our style of leadership, and being proactive in that way and getting coaching in advance can help prevent the escalation of things, and leaving
Absolutely.
from a position, because we need everybody. We can't
And the
afford to
good
lose.
news is that nothing that I've talked about is necessarily falling in the mental health, the mental illness category. But like you had said, it could absolutely be a slippery slope.
Absolutely.
They could be a reflection of burnout, and could be a slippery slope into a mental health problem. So it is, like you said, it's better to catch it early, before it escalates. And if it's already escalated, that even more call to action to get some help, because the systems issues are not going to change overnight,
No.
right? So it's kind of this like the serenity prayer, right? Controlling the things that you can, And certainly we can control ourselves. So what can we do and the actions that we take to help ourselves?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sue, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast today. I hope everyone listening, I want to thank you for taking time out to be with us today, and hopefully you had some good takeaways. If any of you want to reach out to Sue for any further information or on her consulting and coaching, I will have all of her information available on LinkedIn, our social media posting, as well as her bio page on the website. So thank you again, Sue, for your time today.
Thank you so much, Katie. It's been an honor to be here and to speak with you about this important topic.
It's been an honor to have you. Hope everyone has a wonderful rest of your day and week, and we'll talk to you soon.